Welcome to the 2019 Collaborative Group of the Americas podcast series, which is brought to you by the CGA Education Committee. Today's episode is part one in a series on familial adenomatous polyposis and focuses on the identification and management of gastric polyps in this setting. My name is Dennis Onan. I'm a gastroenterologist in Denver, Colorado, and I'll be your host today. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. This podcast was recorded on April 4th, and the content reflects expert opinion on data available at that time. As with any medical condition, we're constantly learning more about FAP, so some of the information discussed here may not be applicable indefinitely. Our listeners will be familiar with FAP as being a highly penetrant adenomatous polyposis syndrome, predisposing to colorectal as well as extracolonic cancers. Gastric polyps occur commonly in the setting of FAP. They come in several varieties and have variable risks that lead to different management approaches. We plan to explore these issues in this podcast. During today's podcast, I'll be speaking with Drs. Carol Burke and Gautam Mankani, who are both gastroenterologists at the Cleveland Clinic. Thank you both for speaking with us today. First of all, can you introduce yourselves and briefly explain your role in the care of patients with FAP at the Cleveland Clinic? Dr. Burke?
Thank you, Dr. Onan. I'm Carol Burke. I'm a staff gastroenterologist at the Cleveland Clinic, and I've been here since my fellowship. My practice has been focused on the management of patients with hereditary colorectal cancer syndromes, including FAP, and I'm also the section head for the Center of Polyposis and the Sanford R. Weiss MD Center for Hereditary Colorectal Neoplasia at the Cleveland Clinic.
Great. Dr. Mankani?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Onan. So I just finished my fellowship at the Cleveland Clinic and now I've signed on as a staff gastroenterologist. I was trained by Dr. Burke. I've joined our Hereditary Cancer Center and see a lot of patients with both FAP and AFAP.
Great. So we have some real talent here. So let's start with you, Dr. Burke. How common are gastric polyps overall and how often are they found in patients with FAP?
That's a great question, Dennis, because patients are often concerned when we find gastric polyps at the time of endoscopy when we're assessing for other conditions, and about 5% of people that are coming in for endoscopy will have gastric polyps, mostly fundic gland polyps. And when we talk about FAP, nearly everyone, but I'd say at least 80% of individuals with the adenomatous polyposis syndromes will have fundic gland polyps in their stomach.
Wow. So really common in FAP compared to the general population. But tell us about these polyps. Where in the stomach do they occur? And is that location different in FAP than it is in sporadic gastric polyps?
Yeah, sure. So most polyps that we see in the stomach are in the upper portion of the stomach called the fundus. And generally when we have someone that does not have FAP, they might have a handful of polyps, 2, 3, 10. But when we're talking about FAP, the polyps are much more numerous and they can be bigger, but again, they seem to carpet the upper portion of the stomach called the fundus.
So is that location similar to patients with sporadic gastric polyps? I know the number is more, but is the location of polyps similar overall?
Yeah, it is. The location is quite similar to patients with sporadic gastric fundic gland polyps. But in FAP, we can see the fundic gland polyps up in the cardia, which is just below the junction of the esophagus and the stomach, including the fundus, and then down in the body of the stomach. And in patients with sporadic polyps, you know, generally they're fewer, but in the same location. The other thing that I think might differentiate sporadic fundic gland polyps from a patient with FAP is that occasionally polyps can be seen in the lower portion of the stomach called the antrum, or before the stomach enters into the duodenum called the prepyloric area. And those are generally, you know, a different type of polyps than the fundic gland polyps. Those would be the adenomas.
Yeah, so tell us about those two different types of, or however many different types of gastric polyps that you see in familial polyposis. And you mentioned fundic gland polyps and adenomas. Is that it predominantly, or are there others as well?
Well, you know, Dennis, historically, all we thought is that patients with FAP have fundic gland polyps, that was the only polyp in the upper portion of the stomach, when with an occasional FAP patient having an adenoma, a frankly dysplastic polyp in the upper portion of the stomach. And we've known that about 12% of FAP patients actually have adenomas in the antrum. But now with work that we've done, and particularly Dr. Mankenny has gotten a grant that funded research in the area, we know that there's a variety of type of polyps that can be present in the upper portion of the stomach, beyond the fundic gland polyp, with or without dysplasia, beyond the tubular adenoma, and there could be the spectrum of tubulovillus or villus adenomas. But we also have found what we think is the precursor to cancer in patients with FAP, the pyloric gland adenoma, and then there is also a foveolar type adenoma. So a variety of different types of polyps in the upper portion of the stomach in patients with FAP that we really are just learning much more about recently.
So that's a lot of polyps. Can you tell them apart endoscopically? Do they look differently, or is it a distinction that's purely based on their microscopic examination?
Well, that's a great question, Dennis. So as part of Dr. Mankenny's grant in the research, we found certain endoscopic features with high definition, near focus, as well as narrow band imaging. Chromoendoscopy was not so helpful. So we found some features that can help us distinguish the fundic gland polyp. And I would say that, you know, as an endoscopist, the fundic gland polyp looks more like a sessile serrated polyp. It has very lacy vessels on the surface. The margins are very clear. It looks like glistening or a cellophane top to it. And then the other more concerning lesions that are really precancerous lesions, the tubular adenoma, the pyloric gland adenoma, they look like a frank adenoma. So they have a different pit structure. They have different vessel appearance under near focus and with narrowband imaging, as well as the pyloric gland adenoma, which we are describing as a fish scale appearance. So actually, Dr. Mankenny has become an expert and is creating an atlas for these lesions. But yes, we can tell the concerning lesions that are probably the lesions that need to be identified and removed from the fundic gland polyp that just needs to be kind of looked at and say, oh, this is nothing of concern.
All right. So that'd be really helpful to be able to distinguish those. Let's talk a bit more about the fundic gland polyps first. What causes them in FAP and what else can cause fundic gland polyps?
Yeah, sure. So as we said, that these are not so rare in the sporadic population. They're quite common in the FAP population. And we know that in the sporadic population and maybe in FAP, that there's an association between those and the use of proton pump inhibitors. That's one of the most frequently prescribed medications. Proton pumps, the acid-secreting cells in the stomach, are located in the fundus, and these parietal cells, if they're inhibited from secreting their acid, they can become big and prominent. And so there is an association between the use of proton pump inhibitors and these fundic gland polyps. But suffice it to say that in the sporadic population, you don't need to worry about people that are on PPIs and the presence of fundic gland polyps because they don't turn into cancer in the sporadic population. And we think that it would be very rare, a case report, that fundic gland polyps in and of themselves are the focus for cancer. So there is the association with the use of potent acid suppression medications. And we know if you look like genetically at these polyps, there's a difference between sporadic population polyps that are, those polyps are really due to an activating beta-catenin mutation, and patients with FAP are more related to, and these are somatic mutations in APC. So I don't want to get into the weeds on the genetics of them, but there are some differences in terms of the genetic basis, the somatic changes that are seen in these polyps. But the more common association is these are proton pump inhibitors. People don't need to come off their acid-lowering medications for the sporadic population, and you don't need to remove all these. And in FAP, only big polyps, the fundic gland polyps, need to be removed, a centimeter or greater in size.
That's what I was going to ask you about next. So how many of these polyps can occur in FAP? Do you see scores of them, hundreds, thousands? How many?
Yeah, you're right, Dennis. So generally, 80% of patients with FAP have fundic gland polyps. We have basically decided to categorize them in our endoscopy reports to 0, 0 to 30, 30 to 50, 50 to 100, more than 100, and carpeting. And in fact, when people start to have mounds of polyps, carpeting of polyps in the upper portion of the stomach, or white patches in the stomach, those are the individuals that we need to be concerned about. Mounds of polyps, which is greater than, you know, 2 centimeters in size, a carpeting where you can't see any intervening normal mucosa in the upper stomach, a white mucosal patch, and polyps that are greater than 1 centimeter. Those are the high-risk patients that have been associated with cancer in our practice.
And are those the ones you remove, and can you leave the rest alone?
Yeah, so what we're doing now, Dennis, is when we identify the endoscopic features of a high-risk polyp, we remove those. If we see a fundogland polyp that's 1 centimeter or greater in size, we remove those. Now, virtually 50% of fundogland polyps in a patient with FAP will have low-grade foveolar dysplasia. So people don't need to have their stomach removed. They don't need to have all of those polyps removed. But ones that are 1 centimeter or greater, the fundogland polyps do need to come out, because we found in a series of cases that we studied and published years ago, that 3% of those will have high-grade dysplasia. So it's hard to see the foveolar or high-grade dysplasia in the fundogland polyps. Then what we do with patients that have mounds of polyps, we actually will start debulking them. So lifting and removing large patches of mounds of polyps where you can't really see underlying mucosa. And we also take seriously the white mucosal patch in the fundus of the stomach, and we lift and remove that as well, because there's our study as well as a study from France that showed that people with white mucosal patches in the setting of fundogland, or I should say proximal polyposis, have high-risk findings either within the patch or outside of the patch that need attention.
Well, really, it makes it clear that it's important for people who have FAP to have their stomachs examined by somebody who does a lot of it, because that's a pretty complex sort of approach. But let's move on and talk about gastric adenomas. Can they be distinguished from fundogland polyps? How do you distinguish them endoscopically, and how are they managed differently?
Yeah, so the adenomas, we can pick up a good endoscopist that does a lot of colonoscopy. We would probably be skillful at picking up the adenomas in the proximal stomach of patients with FAP, or even in the, of course, in the antrum of the stomach, because they look endoscopically different. They have a different pit pattern and they have a different vessel pattern. So if endoscopists are used to using the NICE criteria for NBI or chromoendoscopy, they look substantially different than the fundogland polyp, which again, in my mind, is more akin to the look of a sessile serrated polyp, a glistening surface, very fine lacy vessel pattern, small white pits, well demarcated border. So they actually are white and glistening, or the same color as the underlying mucosa, and the adenomas are more brown looking and then distinctly different using NBI characteristics. They are usually solitary, they can be big. And those are a lesion that need to be removed, as well as the pyloric gland adenoma that looks distinctly different from the fundogland polyp and the tubular adenoma.
Got it. So do you have a pretty specialized screening protocol for looking for gastric polyps and FAP?
We do, Dennis. And I think the word of caution for people that are listening is that patients with FAP historically have been thought to have fundogland polyps, ho-hum, nothing to worry about. They never turn into anything. And you always surveyed individuals with FAP based on their Spiegelman stage of duodenal polyposis. But what we've learned over the years, especially with the increasing incidence of gastric cancer, is that the high-risk FAP stomach overrides the duodenal screening frequency when it is severe. And so those individuals that have multifocal high-grade dysplasia in the setting of fundogland polyps, that have multifocal low-grade dysplasia related to tubular adenomas, or that have pyloric gland adenomas, especially if they have low-grade, you know, they are a low-grade dysplastic lesion, those are the people where their stomach would override the frequency of Spiegelman staging-directed duodenal surveillance. So those individuals are coming back at a minimum on a one-year basis, and then again, you know, they have their you know, people with carpeting have the mounds removed, large polyps removed, and then we do use NBI and high definition white light with near focus to look for, you know, you can imagine with 100 polyps or carpeting of polyps that it really takes a scrutinizing approach to looking at the mucosa and removal of any lesions that are suspicious.
Right. Well, that's a good segue. Let's switch gears a little bit. Thanks very much, Carol, for that information. It's really valuable. Let's talk about gastric cancer a little bit more in FAP. First of all, Dr. Mankini, why are you concerned about gastric polyps and FAP? Can they cause symptoms themselves, or is it really primarily the cancer risk that concerned you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, building off what Carol Burke said, so 5 years ago, if we did this podcast, I would have said there's nothing to worry about. There's no gastric cancer risk. But now we're finding that all our gastric cancer patients really have only occurred in the last 2 or 3 years. So there is an association with the gastric polyposis and with the gastric cancers. The scary part is most of them were asymptomatic. So they're not even having symptoms themselves, and we're either just finding them on our endoscopic exams or through other methods when they go to surgery for different reasons. So yeah, most of them are asymptomatic.
They don't typically cause symptoms. So the major worry is progression to cancer, right?
Correct.
Okay. Do the stomach cancers in FAP, do they arise actually within the fundic gland polyp themselves or the adenomas? Are there de novo cancers? And if they do arise in the adenomas, what's the risk of progression of each type of these gastric polyps to cancer?
You know, this is an area that's very ripe for research. And we're also learning a lot as we go, since this phenomenon of gastric cancer is fairly new. Previously, again, like Carol Burke was saying, we thought patients or people with FAP only had fundic gland polyps and they had no risk of cancer. That's initially we thought our fundic gland polyps were turning into cancer. But as we do more work in this area, we're finding that gastric cancer patients also have more pyloric gland adenomas, tubular adenomas, different types of polyps other than fundic gland polyps. What we don't know, and where research should occur, is when do they turn into cancer, how soon do they turn into cancer, and do they go through the classic stages that we're all familiar with, which is low-grade, high-grade dysplasia, and then cancer. We don't know that.
Right. So you mentioned that you're seeing more gastric cancer. Is there been a real change in incidence? Are the time trends showing an increase, or is it just that we're better at identifying them and taking note of them?
No, we didn't diagnose our first case at the Cleveland Clinic until 2006. Then our second case was in 2012, and all our cases have been in the last 3 years after that. So there's definitely a change in trend and a recent increase in incidence of gastric cancer. Work done from 20, 30 years ago showed that there was really no risk of gastric cancer in Western FAP patients. Now, that being said, gastric cancer has always been a risk for Eastern and primarily Asian FAP patients.
What do you think is driving this increase in Western populations? Do you have a hypothesis?
Yeah, so you know, the genotype of the disease has not changed. The genes are all the same. We wonder if it's to do with the phenotype. Is it exposure to something in the environment? Is it the diet? Is it our Western lifestyles? That's one possibility. The other is, you know, we're dealing with an aging FAP population now. So previously everyone died of colon cancer, but now they're having prophylactic colectomies, and that colon cancer risk is significantly reduced. So maybe it's just an older population we're dealing with, and this is something we should worry about.
Well, how about race, ethnicity, or geographically? You mentioned that Western countries, this is a recent event, but it's been going on in Eastern countries. How about race and ethnicity? Is there anything really related causally to gastric cancer risk based on race, ethnicity, or geographically for that matter?
So when you look at FAP around the world, there's always been a risk of gastric cancer in Eastern FAP patients, primarily South Koreans, Japanese, and even Chinese FAP patients. Now, those populations also have a risk of gastric cancer in general. In fact, in their general population, the risk of gastric cancer is similar to our risk of colon cancer here in the United States. So in terms of Asian FAP, yes, there's always been that risk. So what we're seeing is that new in the Western FAP population, and all our gastric cancer cases happen to be Caucasians.
So In those Eastern countries, the thinking, I believe, that, about the gastric cancer risk is that much of it is related to H. pylori infection, particularly early in life infection, and the use of salted and pickled foods and things like that. And refrigeration and eradication of H. pylori have decreased them there as well as here, but those risk factors aren't increasing in this country. Do you have any idea about what the lifestyle or demographic risk factors might be causing this increase?
You know, a great question. In fact, when we looked at all our patients, none of the gastric cancer patients had H. pylori. So it's something different, you know, and there's a huge association with the Western lifestyle and the Western diet, obesity. I think all that is contributing to gastric cancer over here. And again, you know, what we really need to do is a survey and assess to see what exactly in their lifestyles is different. Again, like I said, the phenotype is changing, but the genotype isn't. Now, when we compare Eastern and Western FAP gastric cancers, they also present differently. So I wonder if we're dealing with a different disease. In the East, they're multifocal. They can occur anywhere in the stomach. And they usually are diagnosed at an early stage. For us over here in the West, they're proximal. There may only be one lesion, and they present rather advanced. So it may just be an entire different disease we're actually dealing with.
Yeah, I see. How about the genotype associations or phenotype for that matter? Is there a difference in either polyp risk or cancer risk in folks with attenuated FAP versus classic FAP?
No, traditionally and in from previous research and also from our work on gastric cancer, there's really no association with gastric cancer, FAP and AFAP, or an association with gastric polyp risk or types of polyps.
So it's similar in both groups?
Correct.
And is there any genotype association, particular mutations in the APC gene that appear to be more associated with polyps and gastric cancer than others?
Not that we're finding, nothing that we've found. There's this new disease, GAPS, where you can have a promoter 1B mutation in the APC gene, and these individuals develop gastric polyposis and gastric cancer, but not in our FAP and AFAP populations.
Got it. I'm glad you raised the issue of GAPS, because the next podcast in this series is actually begun specifically on GAPS. So we hope the listeners all tune into that as well. So let's talk about what gastric cancers look like endoscopically. What's the best way to evaluate a patient who has multiple gastric polyps, for example, to be sure that they don't have a cancer?
So touching upon some of the points that we've talked about, is what's scary is that these patients are mostly asymptomatic, and they also have mounds of polyps, so 2-centimeter clusters or a carpeting of polyps, and where there's no normal mucosa. And these cancers can be small foci and hidden by all these lesions. So what we recommend is, when you see a stomach with these high-risk features, that's the mounds and the carpeting, to do random biopsies, but then also to do a close endoscopic exam with both white light and NBI, and try and identify polyps that appear different, large polyps. So all our gastric cancer patients had polyps that were at least 2 centimeters in size, while none of the other patients had polyps of that nature, and remove those. If you have a mound, we also recommend an EUS. So an EUS is an ultrasound probe, which can allow you to see within the mound. You can't see that on endoscopy itself. And some of our cancers have actually formed within the mounds of the polyps. It can also show you under the mounds or areas hidden in that area of polyposis. So the big thing is both random biopsies, but also targeted biopsies of any high-risk areas.
Let's talk about chemo prevention. We know that certain medications like Sulindac and Erlotinib reduce the size and number of colorectal and duodenal polyps in FAP. How about for gastric polyps? Can either the polyp or the cancer risk be reduced by chemo preventive agents?
You know, since gastric cancer was not previously considered a risk in Western FAP patients, there's really been no studies to look at chemo prevention and risk of polyposis. in our work, we're finding an association with PPIs, H2 blockers, COX-2 inhibitors, and an increased risk of gastric cancer. But this mostly is, these are the patients we're also debulking a lot of polyps from, and so we empirically put them on these medications.
Yeah, so it's hard to know which is whether it's causal or exactly. Just an association, right? So finally, can you tell us a little bit about how what the management of gastric cancer is in the setting of FAP? If somebody has a lot of polyps or where they're located, does that affect the management?
Classically, we do upper endoscopic surveillance exams based on the duodenal stage of polyposis, and that's how you determine the intervals that you will do these upper endoscopies. However, we recommend if you have high risk features, so that's a carpeting of polyps or mounds of polyps, you increase the frequency of those endoscopies, regardless of the Spiegelman stage of duodenal polyposis. If you have high grade or high risk pathology, which are the pyloric gland adenomas, tubular adenomas, or fundic gland polyps with high grade dysplasia that we were referring to earlier, that puts you at an even higher risk for gastric cancer, and we recommend even more frequent surveillance, as frequent as 3 to 6 months instead of 2 to 3 years for someone who has no duodenal polyposis.
Yeah, how about in patients who have gastric cancer themselves, that already have a gastric cancer? Does the management, surgical management, subsequent management differ because someone has FAP, or is the approach fundamentally the same?
You know, the approach is fundamentally the same. Gastric cancer is a fairly aggressive disease. And if they are diagnosed at early stage, we recommend a gastrectomy. However, if it's advanced, then it's not really a gastrectomy, but more chemotherapy.
Dennis, right. May I weigh in on this?
Of course you may.
Yeah, so... some patients, sporadic patients with gastric cancer, they may not do a total gastrectomy, but in patients with FAP, a total gastrectomy is the preferable surgery. Prophylactic total gastrectomy is also offered in individuals that have multifocal high-grade dysplasia to prevent gastric cancer. And one thing that clinicians need to be concerned about, as we are, is that when our patients have a total gastrectomy, then they have a Roux limb. And we need to keep the duodenum under watch. So, you know, we are really disturbed by the occurrence of gastric cancer and then, you know, trying to survey the duodenum once there is a, you know, a Roux-en-Y, basically esophageogenostomy, getting back up that limb. So be cautious. You know, prevention is worth a pound of cure. And then if you do need to survey the duodenum, oftentimes balloon enteroscopy is needed then to look at the duodenal limb.
Got it. Oh, gosh, I can't believe it. A fountain of information here. I really want to thank you both for sharing that expertise with us. Is there anything that we've missed or anything additional you'd like to add before we finish? Carol, you want to go first?
Yeah, thank you. Well, we've enjoyed doing the podcast, and I would suggest that if people have questions or concerns about, you know, gastric polyps and FAP, we're always available as a resource. The only thing that I would caution providers and patients, oftentimes a clinician will see a host of fundic gland polyps and tell an FAP patient, you need to have your stomach removed. Do not do that. Get a second opinion, because oftentimes, you know, there is nothing to worry about, and just a little bit of expertise can go a long way in reassurance of the patient and proper management.
Yeah, I think many of us have had patients referred to us telling us that their doctors recommended a gastrectomy or numerous endoscopies to remove such polyps. That's an important point. Dr. Mankany, you have any other things we should add?
Yeah, no, thank you for the opportunity to do this podcast with you today. It's been great. This is an area that's very ripe for research. You know, this is a new extraintestinal manifestation that we're seeing. So I hope that we get together as a community and find some answers.
Great. Well, thanks again to both of you for joining us today. So we've discussed the high frequency and histologic types of gastric polyps and FAP, the small but real risk of gastric cancer, as well as sort of the principles of management for both the polyps and the cancer. And finally, prevention. Be sure to tune in next month for episode 2 in this series, which will focus on GAPS, as we mentioned, gastrointestinal adenocarcinoma and proximal polyposis syndrome. As many of you know, that's a specific subtype of FAP in which polyps development is largely limited to the stomach. And so it'll be sort of an extension of this and add to the discussion we've had today. I want to thank you all for listening. I hope it was as valuable for you as it certainly was for me. And enjoy the remainder of your day.
Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
You betcha. Thank you.